Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, and you can get a no-cost expert opinion while exploring your retirement options. Using Skype or the old-fashioned telephone, Steve can review your portfolio and offer some suggestions. There's no charge, no obligation of any kind. He makes just a limited number of appointments for these, so schedule your time. Toll-free, 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, or you can go to investtalk.com and click on Schedule a Meeting. And now, InvestTalk. On radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley. You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. And we hope you think this is a meeting place where you can get straight answers to any funny questions you might have. Now, I may not have all the answers. I'm not pretending to know it all. I don't. But I do have access to a lot of computer software, and I do have a lot of years in the business. So, and of course, performing my day job, I speak to many people, both clients and others, who all need a little extra help now and then. You know, help with your 401ks, help with the IRAs. Should you be buying a house? Do I need a trust? You know, those kinds of things. All kinds of financial questions. And I try to help everybody connect the dots to a secure life and eventually retirement. And that's my job, I hope. That's what I do every day. That's what I like to do. Now let's talk about your money concerns. Our number one question, our number one job is to answer your questions. 888-99-CHART. So let's take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
Thank you for taking the call. I had a question about a Roth. Is it possible to go to a broker and open up a Roth retirement account and still have it self-directed? You know, I decide what stocks I want to get in and get out of on a regular basis.
Yes. Yes. Matter of fact, that's what most brokerage accounts are, self-directed. If you open up a brokerage account, either at a discount broker or a full-service broker, you're the one that directs what's bought and sold there. If you get a full-service brokerage firm, they'll make recommendations, okay? And they'll make comments about what you want to buy. You know? But the problem with that full-service brokerage, that model, that business model is kind of damaged because everybody knows those full-service brokerage from those big houses are biased. If they work for JP Morgan, you think that the brokerage firm is not going to push the stocks that JP Morgan supports? Of course they're going to push them. Are they the best ones? Who knows? Maybe, maybe not. That's not their job. So a full service brokerage firm and a discount broker firm, you have complete discretion over. You can decide. Now, there are money managers such as myself that have programs that you don't have discretion. We're going to put you in this program, and this is what everybody does in that program. But, believe me, you can be as self-directed as you want to be. Okay? How to buy bonds. We've talked about bonds. I like bonds. Don't think I don't like bonds. There is a place for bonds in every retirement account. I just don't like people not understanding what bonds do and how they work. Long-term bonds are not the best investment, but they are pretty safe. They can be very safe investment. That's going to be our main talking point. How do you buy them? Because this is a problem for many people. They don't know how to do it. What they do is they buy bond funds or bond ETFs. It's not the best thing to do. That's going to be our main talking point. I didn't get to it yesterday, but I'm going to get to the best part-time jobs for retirees. I will get to it today, I promise. Let's go to Sid in Fremont. How you doing, Sid?
I worked for a big bank about a decade ago and had a 401k going with them. So this is about 10 years back. And in the last month, after receiving quarterly statements, et cetera, from them, they pretty much blew out my account and sent me a check for it all.
I don't like that. You know why I don't like that, Sid?
Well, I don't like it either, but what's your reason?
Because it's a distribution of a retirement account to you. How old are you?
41.
See? You're going to get taxed and penalty if you don't immediately put that into an IRA. It's a 401k. Everybody listen up. A 401k is a retirement account. Money is put in there that is pre-taxed. When you leave an employer, my thing is I always tell people don't leave it there because you'll forget about it if it's not very big, or you'll just let it sit there. And they do stuff like this. Here, they sent you a check, and they probably gave you an explanation. They probably sent you form letters you probably threw away because it looked like junk mail. They probably did that, and they may not. Maybe they sent it to an old address. But be careful, Sid, because now you have this money in your hand. I would check with my accountant to say, how do I treat this so I don't get a tax problem on this thing? I'm not an expert in accountant. That's why I said it. But I can tell you this. If you tax that money, you're going to get taxed and penalty on it. Because what they did when they send you a check, they notified the government, the IRS.
What if I call the IRS and just say, here, this is what's happened, what should I do?
I would never, ever rely on IRS's information. You know why? Because I did that once and it was totally wrong. Go to a tax guy or an accountant, someone
right.
who knows. Because the IRS will never accept responsibility if they give you wrong information.
I'm thinking of like in a typical retirement account like a Roth IRA, which I have going.
Uh-huh.
My thing is that it's my money, and who has the right, Fidelity or whomever, to just blow out an account and send me a check? Who has the right when it's mine anyway?
Well, they can do that because it is your money, and they say, here, take your money and do something else with it. We don't want it anymore. That's basically what they told you. In effect, by sending you the check. They can do that, but you have to take proper steps to protect yourself at this point. You're going to have to open up or put up an IRA, and not a Roth IRA, by the way, Sid. Can't put in a Roth IRA. It had to be a regular IRA. Because a Roth IRA is set up with pre-tax money. A 401k is after-tax money. You have to keep them separate.
Oh, but can I do a self-directed?
Yes. You can direct it, yes, that IRA, yes.
But it can't be a Roth. It
cannot be a Roth. That's
because
be a regular
I prefer
IRA.
The Roth in general.
Yeah. Sid, I appreciate the call, and good luck with that. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium Newsletter. It comes out each Friday. And one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
Take a look at our new Discipline Equity Program from KPP Financial. It targets focused growth for maximum returns. You know we have some numerous programs. This one is fully in the market all the time, looking for growth. It's very it's on the aggressive side of growth. I'm looking for the market exposure for growth and momentum. So it's something that, and we do. We also use sector rotations. We utilize sector rotation strategy in it because there's always somewhere in any market something is working, and that's what this program is designed to do. So take a look at it. Of course, we have our balanced income portfolio, which is much more conservative for retirement people looking for income. You know, we got a full range of different programs. So it depends on what kind of investor you want to be. So check in now with your questions, everybody. How about dividend paying investments? Is that what the focus has been the focus for many, many people in the last several years? Is that what you're looking for? Give us a call. 888-99-CHART. We're going to go to Stan in Temecula. How you doing, Stan?
Good. I've been very perplexed about something. I'm hoping you can help me out. The question is, looking at stocks that have a high short ratio, is that a red flag for you as an investor? How do you interpret the number? Does that equivocate to more risk in a stock? Or
very good question, okay? Because there's not really a very simple answer to this. If you have a lot of short interest. For everybody else, Stan, when I answer these questions, I try to answer in general enough so everybody else has some interest in the question. A shorting a stock means you think the stock's going to go down, okay, when you short. And Stan is asking, when you have a lot of short interest, a lot of shorts of the shares of stock, that means a lot of people, some big institutions, somebody is thinking the stock is overvalued and going to go down, not up. And they're going to make money if it does, but they have shorts. So the assumption is that if there's a lot of short interest, that must mean there's something wrong with the stock because a lot of people think it's going to go down. And Stan, that's not necessarily so, first of all, number one. And number two, having a lot of short interest is actually supportive of the stock price. Because what happens is those people have to buy the stock to get out of their short somewhere, sometime. That's right. How you get out of a short. You buy stocks. So if there's too much short interest, and now what does that mean, too much? Then you want to stay away from it if it's too much short interest. How they translate that, Stan, one way is to hard to borrow stock. The stock could be hard to borrow because when you're shorting, you're borrowing the stock and sell it short. So if you're hard to borrow, it's either hard to borrow because there's not many, very many shares in the float and it's just not borrowable, or there's too many shorts and it's hard to find the shares to sell short. What you really want to look for, Stan, is the increase of short interest, that more and more and more shorts are coming on board. That tells you more and more people are being convinced that there's something's wrong with the stock.
So if you take a stock like Apple, for instance,
yes, okay.
I don't happen to know what the short ratio is, but what would be an alarm for you? If,
okay.
Let's say that the short ratio is 5. If you saw it go to 10, then you'd be very concerned. But if it was a very high number, like, say, 15 or 20, and it had stayed there for a while, you would...
I wouldn't be so concerned. I know it sounds odd, because I know that all those people may get short squeezed and drive the price up. Put it this way. I don't want to be part of the crowd. I want to be ahead of the crowd. When you're part of the crowd, it doesn't work very good. So what you want to do is look at the percentage of number of shares of the float. If it's only a few percentage points, that's not very much. That's normal. If it's 15, 20%, get nervous. Don't short
okay.
it.
Looking at it the other way, does that indicate that people think that Apple's going up then because the short ratio is so low?
Yes, that's what that means. And their short ratio is very low, and therefore people think it's going to go up.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call, Stan. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Bonds, how to buy bonds. It's an article from CNN Money that we're referring to. You can buy federal government bonds, U.S. Treasuries, directly from the federal government, don't have to pay anybody any commissions. So if you're going to buy U.S. Treasuries, you do it direct. You go through their website called Treasury Direct. Treasury Direct. They auction these bonds. I know it's going to sound funny, but they do auction these bonds every so often. You know, they have a schedule, and then you can see it at the website, 2-year, 5-year, you know, on and on and on. And they schedule them, and what you would get is what the average auction price is. Now, when I say that, that means everybody's bidding for these U.S. Treasury bonds, and how they bid is they will buy $1 billion worth at 2.3%. That's the bid. And what the federal government does is it gathers up all these bids and averages them and then sells them. Using that average. That's how that works. And you, the individual, will get that price. Same price as the big boys. Doesn't cost you a cent. So that's the best way to buy treasuries. You can go through a broker. Now, with the exception of treasuries, buying individual bonds isn't for the faint of the heart. Most bonds are issued to an investment bank or underwriter. Rather than directly to the public. It doesn't get issued to the public. The bankers buy these bonds, and then they sell them to you. Okay? Now, if you buy the bonds at the initial offering period, in other words, when they first issue the bonds, you can buy them with no sales commission. But after that, it's called, secondary market. Once they're issued, then they can be bought and sold anytime you want, but they're not the initial issue. Then you have to buy. And then you get into things called spreads. That means what the house who owns the bonds is bought it for and how much they're willing to sell it for. And that spread could be anything. And this is where it becomes very difficult. Because you could buy bonds and be ripped off and you don't even know it. You would never know it. So that's very, that's what makes buying bonds in the secondary market, which is where most people buy bonds, difficult. Now, you also can buy, of course, a mutual fund, and the mutual fund has bonds. I mean, that's the way majority of bonds are bought these days, through ETFs and mutual funds. And the manager of the mutual funds or the ETFs are the ones who buys the bonds. And so they're usually more attuned to what spreads are supposed to be. But then again, you got to think about your interest rate movement and the environment that you're in. And if interest rates go up, the longer-term bonds will go down faster than the shorter-term bond funds. It gets complex. It's not an easy thing to do. Buying, it sounds like it would be, but the only way it's easy to me is you go to Treasury Direct and buy U.S. Treasuries, and you want to buy a couple $100,000 worth of bonds, you go directly to the Treasury, and you can buy them very easy, no commissions, and you have them. Problem is they don't pay very much. They are federally tax-free. The income you get from them are tax-free from the federal government. You buy municipal bonds, it's tax-free both from the state government and the federal government. If you buy them in the state that you're located in, that you file your tax return in, always difficult. How long since you've done a complete retirement review? And I am limited to just a few days a month. So, you know, my next date would be San Diego on July 8th, San Jose on July 15th. And to save your spot, just go to investtalk.com and click on make an appointment if you want to meet with me. Don't put it off. I know everybody's off for the summer vacation. Don't put it off if you can't help it. Right now, we're ready to take on money questions from you. 888-99-CHART is how you get through, and you're listening to Invest Talk.
Now is a good time to call Invest Talk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on Invest Talk. Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, our phone is always open for your questions. Whether you're new to investing or have a more complex situation or question you want to ask, please do so. 888-992-4278, you can do it anytime. How about if we go to Bill in Livermore? How you doing, Bill?
Yeah, I'm doing good. You?
I'm great. I'm really doing well.
My question was, what's the difference between a registered investment advisor and a certified financial planner?
Very good question, and there is a great big difference. A registered investment advisor is a guy who manages portfolios. We actually manage money. A financial planner does not manage money. A financial planner manages every piece or aspect of your financial life. In other words, he may suggest you buy life insurance. He'll talk about your medical coverage. He'll talk about your house and what kind of mortgage you have, and maybe you need to refinance or get a different mortgage. And he will talk about, you know, where you should put your money in this mutual fund or that, and he'll sell you loaded funds. He'll tell you to put them in loads. But he himself does not manage money. A registered investment advisor gets paid, taking a small piece of the money he manages. A financial planner usually gets paid in one of two ways. He gets commission on the products he sells, life insurance, house, remortgaging a house, he gets a fee for that. He gets a fee for sending you to loaded funds, okay? But he physically does not manage the money, which an advisor does. We get paid a fee for managing the money.
Okay.
Thank you for the call. Let's go to Matt in Cupertino. How you doing, Matt?
Thanks for taking my call. A quick question for you. I was curious in your opinion versus mutual bond funds or individual bond ladders.
I would rather see you buy a ladder of individual bonds than bond funds.
Mm-hmm.
You know why?
Tell me.
Bond funds, now, you got to remember what a bond fund does. It buys a bunch of bonds. So you get nice diversification. That's a big plus, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the net asset value of that bond fund will go up and down depending on interest rates, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if interest rates are moving up and you have a bond fund, the net asset value of that fund will go down. You'll still get your yield, in other words, the dividends that are coming in through those bonds.
You'll still get those. But if your yield is 5% and the bond fund net asset value goes down 5%, you're no further along. If you buy the bonds direct and you buy a good spread of very safe bonds, I'm not interested in high risk stuff. We're talking about very safe stuff. If you buy them and hold them to maturity, they also will go up and down in value, but you will always get your money back plus the yield if you hold them to maturity. Whereas in a bond fund, that doesn't happen. Even though they may hold them to maturity, but the bond fund value goes up and down based on the interest rates. So you can buy a personal bond and you can buy it and hold it, and it will go up and down in value, but if you hold it to maturity, you'll get that money back. That's not necessarily so in a bond fund.
Makes total sense. You saved me a few hours.
Okay. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate the call. We have a program that does buy bonds. We hold in maturity inside there. So we know that they'll go up and down in value, but we'll get the yield, and they'll go back to their par value when they mature, so that you don't have that huge risk of a bond fund that will go up and down.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, I promised to get to this. Someone sent me an email and said, you know, we didn't get to the best part-time jobs. I wanted to know what that was. Okay, here they are. Best part-time jobs for retirees. And reason being, you're going to work in part-time, or you're retired and you want to get back in the workforce because you're bored or you need the extra, a little extra money. And these are really good types of part-time jobs to have. One of them is being a adjunct professor. In other words, if you have special knowledge in something, you don't have to have some PhD or anything like that. You could get paid in the various colleges for teaching a course in whatever your specialty knowledge is. The average fee you get is not a lot, about $2,700 for the course. But it might be fun. That's number one. A lot of my retired clients do this. They are project-based consultants. If you're an engineer or you're an accountant or you have a, you know, a field that you're an expert at, you can work part-time. Those jobs are out there, or a project at a time, you know, that has a short-term full-time but only for 3 weeks or 6 weeks or something. That's very popular. Bookkeeper. Kind of not too difficult. If you have a little bit of knowledge in accounting, you could do that. Tutor. Those are pretty good jobs that are fun and a lot better than being a greeter at Walmart. Okay? So not too stressful. I mean, physically demanding. None of them are. None of these are. And so those are things. If you have special knowledge, that knowledge is worth something. And that's what you can maybe, you know, parlay into a part-time job that you might want to do. Of course, if you hated doing what you did all your career, maybe that's not such a good idea. But, you know, I've had a couple opportunities to teach, and I haven't done it yet, but I've had the opportunity to do it. But I could see that in my older age, wanting to teach things about how to invest, how to find stocks, how to read charts, how to things, you know, in the local junior college or something, just for fun. I think it'd be kind of neat. I really do. Coming up next is Invest Talk 101. If you're looking for absolutes in investing, you're going to be very disappointed. There is no absolute. So in the next half hour right here on Invest Talk, where you can turn for straight talk about your money. So we're going to talk about not finding absolutes in investing. I think that's very important to learn. I'm Steve Peasley, and you're listening to Invest Talk.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now. Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. The typical default benchmark, the S&P 500, may not be correlated to the assets that you actually own. How to tell if your portfolio is a winner? That's one of our talking points on Thursday's podcast. We hope you can join us then. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
David Berkeley, how you doing, David?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling.
My question has to do with the fact that my son is getting married in December, and to pay for my part of the wedding, I need to generate some liquid cash.
Okay.
And I was thinking of one of two ways to do that. One is I have a Roth IRA, which I have about $85,000.
Okay.
I also have a couple of index mutual funds that I would have to sell to get the cash.
Okay.
That I would have to pay some capital gains.
Uh-huh.
I was wondering which might be the better way to go to generate that cash.
Let me ask you how old you are, David.
I'm 63.
Okay, so are you able to take money out of that Roth without any tax consequences?
I am. It's been over 5 years.
Okay. I'm really opposed to paying taxes wherever possible.
Okay, yes.
If you have no other sources, and those are the only two choices you're giving me, I would go with the Roth. And I'd rather see you stay in at least for the next 3 months. I would wait as long as I can, even in the Roth. You want to just play the odds and see if you can get a little bit extra growth out of it. And I'd take it out of the Roth just because of the tax issues.
Okay.
Okay?
Very helpful.
Thanks, David.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. Judy in Thousand Oaks, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Thanks for calling.
I have a question about exchange-traded funds.
Mm-hmm.
Do they pay dividends?
Yes. If you buy exchange-traded funds that has dividends, yes, they'll pay dividends, yes.
Okay.
There are some exchange-traded funds, Judy, that specialize in dividends.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So I haven't really got into exchange-traded funds.
I'm telling you, I think they're going to be, you know, it's a really good way, Judy, to instantly get diversified in a particular sector or a particular, or an index or a country. Very good way to instantly get yourself, and you can get out anytime. Like you could trade it like a stock, and you can short ETFs if you want to.
Well, the one reason I was interested is because I don't really understand international like some of the other companies that I'm in individually, so I thought it would be better.
Actually, it would be, because you'll have a good diversification. Judy, thanks for the call.
Hey, you're welcome.
Okay, let's go to Richard in Pacifica. How you doing, Richard?
Today my question is on investing or planning college for my son.
Okay.
I had a thought, if I invest in a 529, what if at the point he's going to go to college, he decides he doesn't want to go? What do I do with the money then? Or
very good question.
Should I invest in something different to give him that option when he becomes that age?
Let's talk about a 529 plan, because I know a lot of people may not know what that is. Each state puts together what's called a 529 plan. Not every state has one. It is a plan for college education. College education. I stress college because it's only can be used for college. And an accredited college. The 529 plan, you put money in. You can put quite a bit. I don't remember the amount. Richard, do you happen to know?
Per year?
Yeah.
Or to start it out with?
Per year. What's a maximum you could put in it? It's in the thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it's a few thousand, somewhere there.
But the problem that Richard's asking, and this is the problem, you set up a 529 program for your child to go to college, and then when he's 18, he decides he doesn't want to go to college. A 529 plan can only be used for college. You can't use it for anything else. What you can do at that point is roll it over to another child or another adult. You could use it for your college if you want to go back to school. If you don't, you're going to get taxed and penalty if you take it out of the 529 program and not use it for college.
Okay.
Find out before you started what that tax and penalty. If you have two children, you can set up two, and if one doesn't go, roll the other one into, I mean, somehow you got to roll it.
Right. He's a single child, so.
Then you got an issue there. What if he doesn't?
What other investments would be equivalent to a 529 that I could get into for him?
That is a good alternative. A 529 plan usually has limits. The good thing about the 529 is you get the tax write-off, okay?
Right.
Now, you can also do a Coverdell, which is an education IRA for your child.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a little bit more flexible, but you can't put as much money in it. I think it's $3,000 a year. But a Coverdell can be used for other things other than an approved college. So let's say he wanted to be a truck driver or a hairdresser. You can use that money. Let's say you wanted to use that money for a private high school or elementary school or a middle school. You can use that money.
Okay,
so that gives you a little bit more freedom. And again, you can roll that over to another child, because you never know, you maybe have another one. Or a niece or a nephew, if you feel extra generous and you have lots of money in 20 years from now. But you still have to use it for education, and you still will get penalized if you use it for something other than education. It's just a lot more flexible.
Okay.
Thanks, Richard. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
One of the ways we serve our listeners is individual portfolio checkups. Steve meets with a limited number of listeners at KPP offices in Northern and Southern California. And if you're a podcast listener and you don't live in those areas, there are ways you can avail yourself of this service too. Just call 888-99-CHART and find out more about it.
Time for InvestTalk 101. Investing laws, not chiseled in stone, but here's some investing laws. If you're just starting out on your investing journey, one of the first things you should learn about investing is that theories and predictions are mostly wrong. When someone predicts what's going to happen in the market, they're most often wrong. And that really proves the point. There are no absolutes. You'll hear me saying, well, there's usually a correction in the summer, because there usually is. But I don't want to predict it. I'm just looking at history and saying, okay, this history has repeated itself more than 50% of the time. So maybe that we'll get that same repeat. But no one can predict. There is no. It's just impossible. And remember, I'm not... When we come up with probabilities, that is not an ironclad, hard fact. You know, it's not like physics where you can, you know, it's a lot like physics where it's kind of soft. You don't know for sure. You can't try to prove your theories. It's hard to, that's what the market is. You look at probabilities. What's the probability of something happening versus the possibility? And you invest using the probabilities. And you hear me always talk about, when you're buying a company, make sure it's making money. Make sure it's growing its money. Why would you not want to buy a business that has earnings and sales growing? That's what you want to buy. Not a story, because a story, or it's going to have the great XYZ product. Well, wait till that product comes out. Well, then you say, well, I want to get on the ground floor. Everybody thinks they're going to get on the ground floor. That's not how you invest successfully. Those things are rare, getting in on the ground floor. They're so rare that I don't think you as an investor should even consider it. So just be aware that there is no absolutes investing. There is nothing that you can't say, oh, it's going to grow 20%, and if it grows 20%, the stock should go up so much. No, not necessarily. Mm-mm. It's not that way. I can say this with all certainty. Stocks go up when their earnings go up. The trick is, it's not a perfect symmetry. It doesn't go up exactly the same time that the earnings go up or go down. You don't know when that happens. But I can guarantee you, if that company earns more and more and more every year, year after year after year after year, that stock price will go up. It's that simple. It's just never perfect. That's InvestTalk 101. Are you a beginning investor? Well, get in touch. I want to talk to you. Bring your question. No, don't worry about, you know, trying to embarrass yourself about a question you might think is too simple. There is no such thing. So, and if you don't want to call me on the air, you can always send me an email. Remember, my phone number on the air is 888-99-CHART. But you can also click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com and send me a question through the email.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium Newsletter. It comes out each Friday, and one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
Let's go to John in the Bay Area. How you doing, John?
Pretty good, Steve. Thanks
for calling.
Hey, I've got a 403B from a former employer sitting in cash right now. I was getting ready to go through the steps and convert it and move it into an IRA. Any thoughts on which way to push it?
How old are you, John?
44.
Okay, well, you're going to need to be in the market. You're too young not to be in the market. So,
right, I got a 401K as well, but this thing has been sitting around, and with all that's been going on in the last couple of years, I've just let it sit there and,
Convert to an IRA, put some in international exposure, some in emerging market exposure, and then some, more, a majority of it in American growing companies.
You know, growth, you could use funds or ETFs. If you're going to use funds, make sure it's small, mid, or large cap growth funds. And make sure you have some foreign exposure. Dividends are important as well. So spread it around, John. Don't put it all in any one thing. Don't spread it to 100 different things, but spread it around enough that you get a good exposure through various sectors of the market. And don't forget that foreign exposure, because long-term, that's where the growth is going to come from.
Okay.
Call me if you want more details. I'll be happy to give them to you.
Great. Thank you very much.
John, appreciate the call. Thank you. Let's go to Bill in Pleasanton. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing good. You?
I'm doing great. Thanks for the call.
I have one mutual fund that's down about 40%. Mm-hmm. That's the meltdown. And it was down, and I just got the quarterly report, and it was down another 8%. You changed to a different fund, or?
Well, what's the description of the fund?
It's a Century Growth Fund.
Okay. Then what you want to do is you want to compare it. Go to Morningstar.com and compare it, that particular fund, with all other growth funds. Now, if it's a large cap, small cap, I don't know, mid cap, you need to know that is a large cap fund, growth fund. Then look at all large cap growth funds. If they were down 50% and yours was down 40, I know that's bad. You hate it and I hate it too. But if it outperformed its peer group, you want to stick with it. If the first quarter this year, the peer group is down 12% and yours is down 8, you kind of want to stay with it. I know that doesn't sound good, does it? Doesn't feel good, doesn't sound good. But Bill, long term, if it's outperformed on the downside, hopefully it's outperformed on the upside as well. And it should make a very good comeback if it's better than the rest of its peer group.
Oh, yes. It's done very well for me. I'm
going to suggest you give it another year. And as long as the same manager's there, Bill. In other words, he didn't leave, and now you got some rookie there. Time to leave if that's the case.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Appreciate the call.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Okay, let's go to Jim in Carlsbad. How are you doing, Jim?
The question I had was about a mutual fund versus the exchange-traded fund. Mm-hmm. What exactly is the difference between those?
Okay, great question. And the mutual fund has a manager, okay? He may be a large cap mutual fund, he may be a small cap, he may have a discipline that he is employing, and he states that in the prospectus. And he says, I'm going to buy large cap stocks. So he goes out and buys those large cap, and he manages, buys and sells, and he tries to manage that portfolio to make money. A ETF, exchange traded fund, is an unmanaged fund. It could be follow indexes like the QQQs or the SPYs, or it can follow a sector like the insurance sector or the banking sector or oil sector. It could be an ETF that just has those group of stocks in them, but they're not managed at this point. Most of the time they're not managed. They're not managing the ETFs. You're just buying that group of stocks and there you go. So one is much more managed than the other. On the other hand, ETFs are much cheaper because they're not managed. It's the cheaper fees, much cheaper fees than a mutual fund. So
ETFs are more focused on industry groups then, and rather than capital value?
And areas of the world, even countries specific sometimes, or just areas of the market, yes.
Great.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Lisa in San Francisco. How are you doing, Lisa?
Very well, thank you.
What can I do for you?
I am calling because at the moment, my husband and I have a mutual fund, and all of our investments are in the stock market.
Okay.
And we want to go into a safer mode.
Okay.
And we're looking into another mutual fund that has bonds. However, my concern, it will be more a bond fund. My concern is what is going on in the market, saying that the government is not solid enough, and so my concern is those bonds and the treasuries. It's usually most of it, what we're looking at is into treasuries.
Okay.
Am I moving my money? Are bonds risky? I mean, corporate bonds could be, because it depends on the corporation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about U.S. bonds.
Okay. That's a good question, Lisa. The bonds itself, the U.S. Treasury bonds themselves are not risky, but a bond fund is risky.
Yeah.
When you buy a bond directly from the U.S. government, you get the bond, you hold it to maturity, so you get your interest and you get your money back, right?
Uh-huh.
When you're in a bond fund, they buy all kinds of bonds in there, Okay, and they have different maturity dates because they buy some today and then they buy some tomorrow, next week, the week, on and on and on. So what happens in a bond fund, they have bonds maturing all the time and they reinvest the money, right? So if interest rates right now are 4%, you're going to get 4% about a yield on your bond fund. But if interest rates go up to, let's say, 8%, the old bonds are paying 4% go down in value, don't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because you can buy a new one for 8. Those old ones, I'm not going to buy those unless you give me a big discount on them to give me an ultimate 8% return because they're so cheap. So what happened is the bond fund value, the net asset value, you know, what you what the bond fund is worth, goes down when interest rates go up, even though you still get the yield. You get the payment of the dividend, okay? So if interest rates start to rise over next week, next month, next year, 2 years, 3 years, the value of your bond fund, therefore, and will go down. Therefore, the money you put in will go less, get less and less and less. But you'll still get your dividend yield.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Very good question. We do have time for some questions. Just jump in if you have. Have one. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. You can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART. I'll do my best to answer your questions on InvestTalk.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Let's begin our last segment of the hour with a question from Jack in Fremont. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi. I listened to your show, podcast it, and listened to it the next day, and I have a question. My wife has a Roth IRA. And I just started putting that money into some mutual funds. And she just started it, so there's only about $6,000 in it right now. But I heard somebody else call in and said that they only had $10,000 to invest, and what's the best way to invest it? And you recommended ETFs. She's in Fidelity, so I picked a couple of mutual funds. What is the benefit of picking ETFs over mutual funds? Can you please explain that? Thanks. I'll be listening on the next pod show, and I enjoy your show. Listen to it all the time. Thank you.
Okay. A mutual fund, it has a manager in it, and that manager costs money. An ETF doesn't usually have a manager, and they cost less money. Both cost money. But an ETF, if you're going to index and you're just going to use index investing, ETFs is probably a better way to do it. If you're going to use, if you want to use a manager to buy and sell stuff inside the mutual fund, then you buy the mutual fund because then you rely on that manager to buy and sell. So it depends on what you're after. If you're just going to use indexing, why pay more money? You don't have to. Excuse me. You can just use an ETF to buy an index fund. The QQQs is the NASDAQ 100. SPY is the S&P 500. DOW is the Dow 30. And then there's RUT, Russell 2000. And an ETF can slice and dice any part of the market these days. You know, if you want to buy oil stocks, and that's what you want to own, you know, have a few hundred dollars in that, and then you have a few hundred dollars in this other sector. I like healthcare. See, that's what you can invest your own, to develop your own portfolio. But if you want the benefit of a manager to make the decisions, then you buy a mutual fund and let the manager decide. And it's really a personal preference. It's not that dramatic of a savings to say don't do it or don't do it. Buy the best managers. That's what you're looking for. Good question. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Where to go when you only have a moment or two and you want to see what's going on in the investing world? You could go to one of those super sites with news by the pound, or you could go to investtalk.com. All the important stories on one page. Click to go deeper when you want to take the time. Investtalk.com. It's not too much of a good thing.
Michael, Half Moon Bay. How you doing, Michael?
Okay, I don't know a whole lot about this subject. So okay. I think it's a pretty good question, though. I worked for a company I invested in my stock. I bought it outright when I left the company. It's still a privately held company. It has not gone public. But it was just recently purchased by a, I guess the term is a blank check company that's already public. I don't know what that means for me and my stock. I got a letter saying that they were going to purchase my stock back from me. But I was kind of holding out till it goes to common stock, but I'm not sure if I'm capable. It doesn't sound like they're going to let me do that.
No, since it's a private company, it's not a public company, you don't have much say.
Okay.
They're going to buy all the stock. Question in your mind is, what are you going to buy it for? How much?
Well, they made an offer to me, but I'm like, I don't know that if I do have an opportunity to go back and say, no, I want to sell you it for this much and see what they say.
If your stock has a voting power, do you know if it does?
I don't think I have enough for a voting power, no.
Yeah, see, most of the voting power is probably held by the insiders, the people who...
Exactly.
Okay, and those guys are going to make the decision. You are not.
You're
going to have to follow on their coattails. Unfortunately, the option that would be left to you is filing suit as a minority shareholder.
Right.
That you feel and you're getting a shaft, and the majority shareholders are getting the benefits, and you're not.
Right.
That does happen, but it's extremely expensive, and you don't want to go that route.
It's a nice little chunk, and I'm happy, but I had absolutely different plans for that money.
And so they messed it up for you.
Well, I mean, at least something happened with it. It's been a while. You know what I mean?
So
I feel good about that. Now, what would you think about taking some of that money and buying it into the company that just bought?
If you feel that the fundamentals of the company, that of the shares that you own, if you feel that's really going to benefit this new company and it's really going to accelerate this new public company's earnings, then yeah, that's a good way to go. If it's so small, the company that stock that you own, if it's like 5% or 10% of the company that's buying it, then it will make no difference. You have to look at the company that's buying it to make sure that they're solid.
Right, right.
So take a look at the relative size and what it really is going to do to their earnings.
Okay.
Well, good luck with it, Michael.
Well, thank you very much. You were very helpful. I appreciate the time.
Thank you for calling. We're out of time for today, everybody. If you have a question, remember, you can call our anytime line at 888-99-CHART, and we'll answer the question on the next Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and we're Justin Klein and everybody at KPP Financial. I want to thank you for listening, and let's meet again here next week.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.